Good morning. Welcome to Friends Church. My name is Vince. It's lovely to meet you all. Let me just do a little house cleaning here for a second. I want to start with a story because I always start with a story, so that's what I do. But the story I want to start with I've actually told here before. But it's a story that's stuck deep in my head because I think it speaks to something that is unique to our community and our conversation. If you grew up in a traditional church, there's a way of conceiving of God that's often considered the right answer. Anyone ever heard of like the old man in the sky with the beard who's like watching you and writing down all the bad stuff you do, right? That's a way to conceive of God. And if you have that conception of God, this conversation isn't really needed because you already have this idea of what God is. But at Friends Church, we explore all different kinds of conceptions of God, right? I talk a lot about this idea of when we love, that's God. So God isn't a being that's up in the sky that's judging you. God is when we love each other, when you do something loving with another person. That's a conception of God. And for me, I grew up with this conception of God that's the old man in the sky watching me, making sure that it, you know, writes down all the bad stuff I did until it's like, oh, he's going to hell. It's like, oh, crap, what did I, like, oh, man. The problem with that is my whole spirituality was based on this idea of guilt and fear. Like, what if I do something wrong? It's like, you know, people often come in here and they're like, so let me tell you a little bit about my life because I think I'm going to get hit by lightning if I come into a church because, you know, that God doesn't like me here. So I took this idea of God and I kind of backed away from it. And I was like, well, that's not working for me anymore. So I went over to the other side and started playing with this idea of when I love, God is. This conception of not even God is a being, but God is a verb, something we do with each other. And that's beautiful, right? I can do anything in my life and I can have God in those moments. We can go dirt biking on the weekend and, you know, some guy crashes, you go help him up. That's God right there. We had a guy this week. Anyone know what a bonk is? Any athletes out there? You know, when your brain just totally shuts off from lack of sugar? This guy was so messed up. He was like, his entire body was shaking. So we like got him out and brought him all the way out to the car so he could get home and get, you know, healthy. To me, in this conception of God, that's God. So it's this beautiful thing, but here's the problem, and I'm going to tell you the problem by way of a story. A friend of mine, I went to Bible school with him, like way in the old days. So he grew up in the same tradition I did. And he probably would have identified himself as a theist at the time. But over the years, he just kind of let that go. I think the same idea of this old guy in the sky who's judging you, it just didn't work. And so at the time of this story, he identified as an atheist, which I have a lot of, you know, philosophically, I understand that a whole lot. But here's the problem. He had a sister, this beautiful girl. She was, you know, she's one of those girls who like in high school was like top marks, valedictorian. She sang like an angel, like literally when she started singing, everyone would stop talking and just listen. She's beautiful, like full triple threat. Like she can do anything. She gets her degree in finance, she comes to Calgary, gets a fantastic job, marries her longtime boyfriend, they have their first child. It's the story that everyone wants. Until she has a nagging cough that won't go away. She thinks it's just a cold, but it's been weeks and months. Goes to the doctor, and of course, after a million tests, the doctor sits her down and says, "You have lung cancer. Never been a smoker. Never been around smoke. Something in her pregnancy caused her hormones to shift that made her more susceptible to cancer. First surgery, takes her lung out. That just blows my mind. Then there's complications. And here's my friend, his older, this is his younger sister, who he feels this protectiveness towards. And he's watching her go through hell. She's got an 8-month-old baby. They've cut her chest open, taken her lung out. Then her other lung and heart falls into that cavity. They cut her open again, start, you know, doing crazy medical stuff. And he's watching this and just helpless. Like, what would you do in those moments? Someone you love, someone you want to protect and take care of. It's just every call they get, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And we go out for a drive one day and we're driving just down Crescent Heights. And he says to me in this moment, he says, Vince, I wished I believed in God so I could pray for my little sister. In letting go of that conception of God, he lost something that he was looking for. Today, I want to try and explore this tension. On the one hand, I don't resonate with a judgmental God sitting up in the sky watching everything I do. On the other hand, when a crisis happens, when the shit hits the fan, I don't know about you, but being able to reach out to something more and just saying, like, help, please. It's a beautiful feeling, isn't it? So here's the question. Can we have our cake and eat it too? Right? Is there a way to explore this conception of God or the divine or the more in a way that we can not have to worry about just a judgmental God that doesn't feel good, but still have moments where we're in crisis and we can still do something with those? And so to explore the concept today, here's what I want to do. I want to interview somebody who knows more about these crises than I do. So you'll understand a little bit more, but for now, please warm welcome for Vince Fowler. We're going to call this morning Vince Squared. We also got a memo to dress alike. That's lovely. How's it going, brother?
Good.
Good. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for wearing my clothes.
Okay. So first, tell us a bit about yourself. Where were you born?
Williams Lake, BC.
Williams Lake, BC.
Little interior town, sort of on par with Red Deer. If this is BC and this is Alberta and Red Deer, they're the same. Everyone thinks BC is super, Williams Lake super north.
So. It's not super north.
It's not. It's no more farther north than Red Deer.
Okay. Went to school there, spent time there, joined the military?
Born, raised, school, everything, joined the military. And
how old are you when you joined the military?
19.
19?
Yeah.
And full on, like?
I wanted to be in the Army since 11, and full on infantry, airborne, jumping out of planes, picking fights with jerks. I grew up with just me and my mom, so until I was 11, and so I got picked on a lot, wrote a lot of checks, my mouth wrote a lot of checks, my body had to cash. So
the military was to get out of that? Or?
So being picked on, I thought, you know, if I was this Army guy, no one would pick on me, and no one would pick on anybody else on my watch, because nothing's more frustrating than watching someone else getting picked on and having no capacity to do anything about it.
Right, so you kind of became the guy who helped people deal with bullies through that part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, then just the physical, mental, if you ever meet someone in the infantry or combat arms, they're professional athletes. Their job is to neutralize the objective, which is a fancy way of
smoke people. I don't even know what that all means. Okay, let's fast forward. Yeah. Get out of the military?
Get out of the military in 95.
Okay, met your lovely wife.
Met my lovely wife.
Danita?
In 2001, yeah.
First child.
First child, amazing, great pregnancy, Hayden. She's born January 5th, 2008. Amazing little human being. Mm. Never thought we'd actually have kids, but we made the decision to pull the goalie, so to speak.
Okay.
And she's amazing. She's beautiful. She's wonderful.
There is a story, though, of you playing tag in the backyard and her totally schooling you. Is that not a true story?
I was pushing 260 pounds, and she was eight.
And you got beat by an eight-year-old.
We were playing tag in the park. We have this game we call Jet Dragon. I'm the dragon. She's the hobbit, because she's hairy. Hairy back Mary. And she jukes me. She sidesteps me. I called a friend of mine who's a personal trainer that same day and says, I need your help. Because she was born when I was 38.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first child, Hayden, she's now how old?
She's 11.
Okay.
She's to hear.
Okay.
Scary.
Second child, when did you guys find out you were pregnant?
Found out we're pregnant spring 2009.
What did you feel like? Were you excited? Were you nervous?
Oh, it was awesome because we knew we wanted two.
Okay.
Hayden's a girl and we found out we're having a boy. So we thought $1 million family. Rock.
Wow.
Awesome. I was super excited. I was just overfilled with joy when I got told, yeah, you're going to have a boy.
So okay.
I didn't care girl, boy. I was like, awesome. Got one of each. Cool.
And pregnancy went smooth. Danita did well.
If Hayden's pregnancy was a 10 out of 10, Hudson's pregnancy, so I'm told by my wife, I didn't feel a thing, was 15 out of 10. Like, it was amazing, comfortable pregnancy, comfortable delivery, everything.
Wow. Brought him home.
Brought him home. So, like, he was born at 1 in the morning on December 20, on the day after Boxing Day, December 27th. I remember I was like, please hold on until the day after Boxing Day. So
why after Boxing
Day? Because the day after a birthday on Boxing Day, I was like, oh. And Hayden's January 5th, so like it's just spring break. It's fun, let's just say. I just thought it would be bad to have a birthday on Christmas Day, Boxing Day. So yeah, anyways,
baby comes out.
Born the same day,
toes,
bring home the same day,
10
fingers, 10 toes.
Okay.
And he sleeps, he poops, he barely cries. He does everything that you just pray a newborn baby would do. So easy. Hayden was a big... Hudson was awesome.
When was the moment you knew something wasn't quite right?
January 5th, 2010.
Put a note on that. Do you notice how he knows the dates of everything? That's incredible. My brain just knows that it happened at some time in the past.
It was an easy one because it was Hayden's birthday. Hayden turned two that morning. Danita wakes me up. She nudges me. Hudson had slept in a bassinet, so she would nurse whenever it was needed. Yeah. And she just said, hey, something's not right. Hudson is, he's not latching on. And if he does, he doesn't stay on. Maybe two, maybe three sucks.
Okay.
So like, okay. Talk about it. I roll over, go back to sleep.
Okay.
She does it again, nudges me, maybe a little while later, but now there's some morning light coming through the room and we start talking a little bit more and just out of the corner of my eye, I noticed this slight blueness in his skin. I get goosebumps just remembering that moment.
What went through your mind? Like, what went through your heart there?
WTF. That's not right. And... so a little uncertainty starts to float in.
Huh.
The Army was a massive influence. So the brain goes into what do we do now mode, right? Like action, action, actions. Make some phone calls. Neighbor is a delivery doctor. It just happens then. So talk to Rona. She says, you guys should probably go to the hospital. If he turns, because I took him up to the light. I held him in the light of the window. And if you just visualize a blue morning, like a blue sky morning, the touch of blue at the horizon is what he looked like.
Wow.
And then it just kind of faded into normal again. I said, okay, this is not right. There's an obstruction of some kind.
Okay.
But I think, no big deal, right? We should go to the hospital.
What do you like, is your chest just like?
It's things are getting tight.
Huh.
I remember I had confidence that this is an easy fix.
Okay.
So do you mind if I make an egg wrap before we go? And Denise's like, no, you're not making an egg wrap before we go. Get your stuff on. So off we go to the hospital, to the children's. We lived at Cougar Ridge at the time, so we just go down the hill.
Okay.
And so we're there in about 10 minutes.
They brought him in right away?
I'm really frustrated that I got to pay for parking at emergency.
Okay.
And annoyed and almost angry. I have a son here. I don't know what's going on. So I don't jump the queue, but when I get to the queue, I just say he's going in and out of blue. I'm pretty sure that'll spark a little sense of urgency in the medical staff. They put us in a treatment room immediately.
Okay. And at this point, is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Where's he going?
He's incredibly lethargic. He's normally, when he's awake, he's normally smiling. Not smiling. He's normally just alert and looking around and making baby noises.
He's like 9 days old.
He's 9 days old.
What's Danita feeling in this moment?
She's nervous. We still have no idea what's going on yet. So we're nervous. We think, like, you hear a little bump in the car and you think, oh, that must, no big deal. Just stop at the shop.
So you're at that place where it's like, okay, yeah. Which way is this going to go?
Yeah, like, we've all been there where, I think, where we go into the hospital and you don't think nothing of it. So.
When did you know this was a bit more serious than just a bump?
When we had 6 people in our treatment room. People were very curious about what was going on. 2 nurses turned into 2 nurses, 2 doctors, and then a specialist came in, and we were moved from there. We knew nothing. That we were kept out of the. It's not that we were kept in the dark. They just didn't know what to tell us. They just said, he's not responding the way we would expect.
Okay.
So we go into trauma. They down the hallway.
So they bring him out to like the escalation room.
Yeah. So trauma is when things go crazy, and there's lots of space. There's everything in this room that can bring in a portable X-ray machine.
Okay, so what at that moment, like when they're moving into trauma, you're like, this is not a small thing.
I'm standing. As a soldier, if you're ready to do something, you're always kind of standing like this, right? And so I'm just standing, hands on the hips, and I'm watching. Danita has already removed herself. She's gone to a treatment room, or not a treatment room, she's gone to a family room. And I said, okay, no problem. I'll just stay here. And Army brain kicks in and it just says, okay, here's my son. I don't know what's going on. Seems slightly serious, but I'm not leaving. A social worker stands next to me and she starts offering me all sorts of things like, would you want to go to the treatment room? Do you want a coffee? Do you want tea? Do you want a juice? Do you want a chair? I'm like, nope, I'm just going to stand my ground, out of your way.
Why? Why was it so important for you to stand your ground?
He's my son. He's my kid. So if this is going to get worse, I'm not leaving my son. It could have been my daughter. I'm not leaving my family. Mm-hmm. Like, if in the military, we call it a fire team partner. In Top Gun, you know, Iceman and Maverick, you don't leave your wingman. So I'm just, dude, I'm here for you no matter what. I know you're 9 days old and you don't know Jack, but you're not going through this alone.
How did it feel to be in that moment watching your son there?
At this moment in time, still confident, but the fear starts to creep in. Like, this is outside of my scope. This is outside of my wheelhouse and what's going on. I'm not making sense of this. We've got 14 medical professionals, and it reminds me of an airstrike. Because people are coming in, they're swooping, they're doing their thing, and they duck out. The next person comes in, ducks out. Just like multiple aircraft taking their turn on the objective.
When did you know that it was serious? When did it really hit?
They bring in a screwdriver, a cordless drill, and they tap into his shin bones. And I'm like, what is that? And she goes, it's called interosseous. They're doing this because, and the medical staff continued to keep her up to date. They're doing this because they can't get a positive IV flow into anything in his body. He's that dehydrated. So we have to tap into his bone marrow. I'm like, why? And I'm just so confused. Like, why isn't he taking an IV? Why? And the veins are so collapsed, and so they got to do this.
Do you remember when the doctor said there's something wrong with his heart?
No, it hadn't happened yet. We move from there. They move us into pediatric intensive care unit.
Okay.
We've now had an X-ray. His heart is a part of his heart is really swollen and big. Uncharacteristically. And so we're in this pediatric intensive care unit, and I'm same thing, watching all this happen.
What's going through your mind in them? Like, what are you feeling?
I'm really afraid now, because I can't fix this. Like a cold, I can, you know, stuffy nose, I can go to the doctor and they give me a little treatment, I give them, you know, amoxicillin. But I have no clue, other than I'm not going to leave you. The social worker doesn't leave my side for the most part. She walks in and gets treatment. They bring her up to speed, but I'm just like, what? What's going on? This is so serious. Mm-hmm. And I've got no capacity to intervene anything. Maybe my saving grace is two things. My military brain keeps me just process. We'll worry about the emotions later. And secondly, the medical team seems to be really confident. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a sense of confidence. But
who told you that he had a heart problem?
Dr. Dickey, we met him after the cardiac arrest.
So his heart stopped for a time.
I'm standing there watching, and I, just like on TV,
That's your kid?
That's my boy. That's my child, my son, everything. And they're doing chest compressions, mm-hmm. CPR. And I'm just spent because I haven't left his side. And this is 4 hours in. This is we would like 10:30, yeah. 2:30. And I start to pray.
What'd you pray?
I just stood there and I stared at him on the treatment bed. And I said, God, save him, take me. I've had a great life, effed a few things up, but I'm good. I'm down with this. I'm totally cool with this. I'm not BSing you. Save him. Take me. Please. Please. I'm okay with that. I hadn't prayed in years.
Why'd you pray?
It was the only thing I thought would help. Help me, help him. I was scared. I was lonely. I was uncertain. I could tell the medical team was doing everything, but I felt completely and utterly alone. And I thought, I'll make that deal. If there's a God and you're real, you save him, you take me. I'm good with that. I'm at peace with that.
Hudson made it through, right?
I go to the treatment room. I let Danita know what's going on, that he's in cardiac arrest. A few minutes later, Dr. Gamble comes in and he says, we got the little guy going again.
And maybe he could have worked on his bedside manner in that one, maybe just throwing it out there.
Yeah, he was a good man.
Got the little guy going again.
He says, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Dickey. I'm going to introduce you to the cardiologist. He didn't use the name. So we meet Dr. Dickey. We meet Dr. Sherman, another cardiologist. Or sorry, Dr. Patton. I mean, who doesn't forget Dr. Patton, World War II, right? Famous general.
Of course, yeah. Totally.
So if you got... we've got Dickey and Patton, and Dickey draws a picture, and he just says, here's the heart. Think of a candy cane. Comes off. There's three arteries go to the arm, both arms and the brain. There's a coarctation. He says, think of a pinched garden hose. This pinched garden hose is down here, so it's preventing blood, oxygenated blood, from getting his organs and his lower legs. And he just says, word for word, he says, Hudson is a very, very sick boy. And if he's still alive in the next 2 hours and we can stabilize him, he'll need a medevac to Edmonton. And he'll require heart surgery.
Wow.
And that's when I lost everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't fall. I remember I held on to something. Danita, just the tears flowed. I was just, I don't know what to do with this. Like, all I kept hearing was, if he's still alive in 2 hours, are you killing, like, are you kidding me? Like, is this really happening? And I'm still in that space of just fear and awkwardness. I don't know what to do about it.
It's interesting that in that moment, that's when you want to reach to something more. Did you think about it ahead of time, or just like, was it spontaneous? Was it just
spontaneous?
Like, just, I don't know what to else do.
We have this expression in the military: "There's no atheist in a foxhole." There isn't. I've seen a lot of shitty times. And hey, do you pray? This could be bad.
Okay. Let me just jump out. In the past, I've ended stories here without telling you guys the happy news. Hudson is how old?
He's 9 and a half. We got a haircut together yesterday.
So he made it through those 2 hours, did well. They flew him to Edmonton.
Longest 2 hours of my life. The intensivist from Edmonton, who was an ex-Israeli military.
Okay.
So she rolls in.
You guys bonded?
We did. She rolls in, and I said, I don't even know how I found that out, but I let her know I'm ex-military. Just give me the facts. And she says, we can do a heart-lung bypass here, send him up, or we stabilize him, send him up, and do a heart-lung bypass there. I said, what would you do? She said, I would stabilize him and get him there as fast as possible. So let's do it. So again, military brain's back in process. Right. I'm feeling confident because she's ex-Israeli army.
Somehow physician. That makes it good.
It just makes it good. They
flew him down to Edmonton.
They put him on a bus to the airport and fly him to Edmonton. Danita and I go home, pack a few things. The reason why we don't fly, because a lot of people ask us this, mm-hmm. They need a respiratory therapist. They need they need all these medical team on the plane. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the way.
Your dead weight is the same.
I'm dead weight. So Danita and I go home, and I'm doing everything I can to help manage her emotions.
And he comes through the surgery okay?
No.
Oh.
As we're heading north, we get this call from the doctors saying, hey, we're the doctors. Hudson's here. We've done an ultrasound. The coarctation is there. It's significant. It needs to be removed, but he has a compromised arch. So we got to go through the front door to rebuild the arch.
So open his chest, full on open heart surgery,
yep.
9 days old.
Up until then, they could do it through the ribs.
Okay.
But at this moment, to rebuild the arch, she says, we've got to open him up to rebuild the arch. Do we have your permission? Hmm. Which I remember just like, really? You just can't do what's right? Like you need my permission to do this? I remember being really confused with our medical system, but in the same time, they were amazing. So I said, yeah, if this gets you into surgery faster, then I don't have to sign anything, you have my verbal thing, mm-hmm. do it. So I pin it, 165, 170, all the way to Edmonton, dry roads.
They opened his chest up, surgery was successful. That surgery was successful?
It was successful, but it was longer. Because on the car, they said, it's a 2.5 hour surgery. So we're thinking, by the time we roll in, he's out of surgery.
Right.
We rolled in, he's still in surgery. And now I'm scared again. Danita's passed out in the sofa next to me. She's laying on the sofa, her head on my lap. And I'm just sitting there and start crying. Mm. Because at this moment in time, he's, like they said, 2.5 hours. Now we're three. Now we're 3.5. Now we're 4. Mm. All right, God, like what? Dude, you're not helping me out here. So, and then we see this gurney come out, little boy on it. We know it's ours. And, mm-hmm. and doctor said it took us a while to get him going again. Jeez. That Dr. Rebecca, okay. Nice man, but terrible bedside manner. took us a while. I said, thank you. He said, I'm just a plumber. So there's a cardiac surgeon and the cardiologist. Okay. Sometimes they're the same person, but in this case, cardiac surgeon, the plumber, cardiologist, anesthesiologist, respiratory therapist, all these people. And he said, it's just touch and go. Like, we'll know more in 48 hours.
Do you remember when he opened his eyes, when Hudson opened his eyes the first time?
Yeah, it was 3.5 days later because they kept him in a coma.
What was that moment when he opened his eyes?
Just a big, deep sigh of relief. Uh-huh. Yeah. His eyes are big. They're blue. He's super high. Because he's on morphine.
He's alive.
But he's alive. And I just keep saying thank you, thank you, thank you. Mm. I'm the happiest man on the planet. there's minor complications. We're in the hospital for 43 days, and there's minor little things along the way, but he ultimately progresses. And there's not a, every single day we were there either together or in shifts.
Full recovery? Is he 100%? Or?
Full recovery. He has a ridge off the aortic as the heart transitions into the artery, there's this ridge. So imagine a big rock in a small stream. That big rock messes with the water pressure, the water flow. But as the stream gets bigger and the water pressure builds, the rock, its significance becomes less. So there's a small they call it a ridge. So it affects his blood pressure and a few things. But so he gets an annual cardiogram and all these different things. He'll do that for the rest of his life.
But he made it.
He made it. He might still need another one. But
you made it.
Yeah, we made it. We're the tightest family in the world. We're Team Fowler.
So. Thanks, brother. Proud of you. What a story, huh? Thanks.
So, yeah. With scotch helps numb skin.
Needs a little joke to transition out of that one. What an incredible story, huh? Like, as he's telling it, it just, you know, my heart's going all sorts of different ways. And that idea that there's nothing I can do, like, I can't ask for help because I don't conceive of anything that way. It feels like there's something missing, doesn't it? Now, I'm not sure where you are on what spirituality looks like for you, how you can conceive of God. Our tradition has a long line of people doing these kind of moments, right? Save him, take me. Whatever it takes. If there's a price, I'll pay it. Won't even blink. So today I want to leave you kind of in a weird moment. I want to connect you through his story to those moments where you're going, I want something more. I want to be able to pray, or I want to be able to reach out, or I want help, or I want something. On the same side, the tension against this idea of a God as a divine being that's just there to judge you and tell you you're not good enough and you're going to hell. I'd like to say I could wrap it all up for you and make this perfect connection, but I don't think it's that simple. I think each of us has to wrestle through those moments. For me, how I conceive of God has widened, it's closed. Sometimes it leans over here to this side where it's like, I want to be able to pray and just ask for something. Sometimes I push away from that and I go someplace completely different and say, God is when I love. I don't actually think there's one right way to conceive of God. I think at different moments in our lives, we need different things. If my kid's in a hospital bed, blue, and they said, if he makes it the next 2 hours, we're good. I'm going over there, right? And I think that's okay. I think part of being in the tradition of Friends Church is having the breadth to be able to access any part of those conceptions of God. Moving around. Taking comfort when we need it. Getting spurred to action when we need it. I think there's a breadth to this whole conversation. And today I want to leave you with that breadth. As you walk through your life, see which different conceptions of God seem to fit in that moment. If you're in a foxhole, God, come here and save my sorry ass, right? When you're distant from that, there's another conception of God. There's all sorts of them. Follow through. Pay attention as you go through your life. What conception of God is feeling right in this moment? What works? What's lacking? Do I need to be open to something different? I think there's still room for that God of comfort. And my journey has taken me a long ways away from that. And these are the first few steps I've taken back towards that. To say, maybe I can still have that too. Everyone take a deep breath with me. Hudson made it. He's 9.5 years old. Kid can outrun me already. It's a pretty incredible story, isn't it? I think our conception of God impacts our lives, and I think it's colored by our lives. So I encourage you to explore that in the broadest way you can over the next couple weeks. Have a great week, everybody. See you next week.